Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football in the capital region. I'm Peter Funnell.
Tonight's program is an absolute cracker. However, before I begin, the ACT Schools Girls Under 12 team were bronze medalists at the Nationals just recently in Coffs Harbour. Go the girls! On the Men's Premier League side of things, Belconnen United and Canberra FC had a knockdown drag-em-out final. 5-4 was the score. Quite frankly, I don't know how Belconnen lost it, and I don't really know how Canberra FC managed to sneak a win. All this indicates that if these two meet in the grand final, it's anyone's game. On the Women's Premier League side, all rounds are now complete and they enter the finals this weekend. Fantastic. The Men's Premier League Pathways game between Belconnen United and Woden Valley FC ended up with a Woden Valley win. It was an incredible game too. Alas for Belconnen, second time round, they had the lion's share of the second half, but just couldn't get that third goal. 3-2 was the final score. Well done to Belconnen. They've had a good season, and Woden Valley now looks to claim the first title for Woden Valley since it's been in the Premier League in 2007. Well done, lads. On the Men's Premier League 16 side of things, Woden Valley played Belconnen United again, and sadly Belconnen United came on the wrong side of the ledger, but the margin was pretty significant this time around, and Michael Azzi's Premier League 16 team at Woden Valley is looking in really good shape. They've got a good coach. Now, on to the program. Three interviews tonight. The first is with Eddie Senator. Look, we're going to talk about some very interesting stuff. He'll talk about his experiences of coaching the 1-4-3-3 in junior football, and in particular his observations of the Australian under 13 girls team in Vietnam. His daughter was a member of that team. Most interesting. And finally, this relationship between futsal and football. And Eddie makes the point that there's much to be gained from futsal for football, and it connects very nicely with the national football curriculum and indeed supports playing of the 1-4-3-3. Then it's on to Heather Reid, and we talk at some length on the disputes and discipline review process that is underway, and importantly, a plea to support referees. If we don't support referees, we have less of them. That just can't be tolerated. And finally, another absolute gem. This is an extract of an interview between a fellow called Dr. Cohen, who's a sports psychologist, and Al Miller, the All-American Hall of Fame football, or soccer as they call it, player. They talk about helping the child reach their potential, in this case in football. They make some very interesting points, and Al Miller certainly sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
I'm talking to Eddie Senator. He's a coach, student of the game, parent of young players, and much travelled in football. Eddie's been on the program again for both futsal and football reasons. And Eddie's young daughter, Sienna, earned her stripes in the Australian under 13 girls team this year. You must be very proud, Eddie.
Yeah, absolutely. Just it's good to see. Yeah, it's good to see the results of some hard work and enthusiasm on the part of Sienna. It's it was a good reward.
And let's emphasise the hard work.
Yeah,
a lot of work involved there.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a good trip away. She learnt heaps, and what was really good about was the coaching staff kept it fairly low key, but the way they were educating the players was pretty impressive. I've got to
Is
say.
Is that right?
Yeah,
very
impressive.
Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, it was just simply the education aspect. They introduced a level of sophistication, which was kind of expected, where games were videoed and then there was post-games review of the videos, but highlighting issues of where things can be improved, but also highlighting where things went well. But doing it in a way that was non-threatening to the players. So the spirit of the team was fantastic over that week. And you've got to remember that, you know, we talk about preparing teams and getting them ready. This squad essentially came together a day before the trip. And then whilst they were in Vietnam, you know, they probably had a day together. And then the tournament went swimmingly. I think they lost two and drew one out of the 10 games, which is a good result considering you were coming from, you know, cold Australia to very, very hot Vietnam.
Yeah, incredible.
And just the instructions, you know, you'd see the coaches on the sideline that very rarely interfere with what was being done on the field. And after a few games, you saw the girls were getting... By the time the tournament was over, they were playing really good football. And that was the thing I noticed the most. A bit wobbly to start, but towards the end it was really good footy. The message and the consistency of the approach, and I think just the way things were explained in a non-threatening way was really good. It was an eye-opener for me, at least.
Yeah, well, it's a theme that occupies a few of us from time to time.
Yeah.
You see there's different coaching styles, but there's no doubt there's a healthy population of coaches who feel the necessity to micromanage every aspect of what's going on in the game.
Yeah, I think, you know, the difficulty with playing for points and having a result is that you have that sort of focus at the end, and maybe that's how coaches are viewed in some sense in terms of self-analysis. Well, you know, we played 10 games this year and we won 5 and drew 2 and lost 3. That's a fair season. Perhaps another way of looking at it is, you know, what was our football at the start and how were we playing footy at the end? Because, you know, particularly in junior football, it's not about a checkbook. It's not about seconding all the best players into the team. So it's not about results. It's not about points. It's about, do we end up better than where we were at the start? Has someone learnt something? Have we retained, for instance, if I'm coming back and coaching this same group next year but a year older, how much of the players from this season are going to come back and play next season? You know, they should be, I think, the measures of success. Sure, when we get to rep stuff and pro stuff is a different measure, but, you know, we're talking about junior footy here.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want to have, if we're going to invest time and energy into, a playing group of whatever the playing population is in the ACT, you know, we want to make sure that they're still there at 16 and 18.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like Siena was surrounded by a very professional environment.
Yeah, very supportive. You know, it's interesting from the girls' perspective that even at training where, you know, perhaps the one pass came off the side of the foot where it shouldn't, or perhaps the ball came a lot quicker so it came off your heel. And were never any negative comments from the girls. It was always supportive, and that was a really good environment to be in. It doesn't matter about that. Let's do that again. Try it again, you know. And that, I don't know, that builds in a bit of confidence in the playing, though, that they're going to be supported by it. You know,
and trust.
Yeah, and you just pay that back in droves. So if someone else, you know, they picked themselves off the ground. A couple of times where they conceded some goals, it was really, really good to see the celebration of, you know, picking the player up on the ground and dusting him off and saying, well, let's get on with it, you know. And they had a good time. It looked like it was a good party happening
there. Now, Nicola Williams, the coach, mentioned that the, I'll say FIFA, or the Asian Confederation, were going to do some data gathering and testing on the players from the region. Did they do that?
No, that was the one day was the rest day where they were going to do skills testing, but that didn't go ahead. I think there was a bit of trouble with the players coping with the weather conditions. It was stifling hot. Australia were fairly lucky. They got 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock games and 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock games, but some were playing in 10 and 2.
That'd be impressive.
Yeah, it was. And in fact, one game against Miramar, I think it was, where the goalkeepers were in full regalia. You know, head to toe, just covered. And during game, they had to change goalkeepers. And, you know, everyone was asking the question why. I mean, you had to look at the Aussie goalkeepers, they were in shorts and T-shirt. And here's Miramar goalkeepers, as if it was snowing out there. And they finally realised, bang, so the goalkeeper that came on was, you know, basically stripped down to shorts.
It melted.
Yeah, it basically melted away.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so it was a bit oppressive. So, no, they didn't do that. It was, you know, a bit of a shame. It would have been interesting to see how our girls pitted against the other nation states. But, you know, suffice to say that the Koreans and Japanese were exceptional.
Yeah, tell us a bit about them. How did they compare technically?
Just the pace at which, the pace and the decision making at which the Japanese played the game, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. The way the ball moved across in and out of the midfield, players out wide, the first touch, the control, the communication vis-a-vis, say, the Koreans that were just worked really hard, committed to making sure the pass stuck.
Mm.
Same but different.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. The Japanese were slick. They just cleaned up. That was one of the Australians' challenging games, was against the Japanese and also the Koreans. But not that far away, really, considering those girls from those states would have been together for a little while. Mm. And as I said, the Australians came together a day before.
Yeah.
You know, I think if the girls played, say, the Japanese on the last day, it wouldn't have been a loss because they've picked up so much during the tournament. So, yeah, and it's no surprise when I was involved with the Capital Football trip to Korea last year, it was no surprise that the technique and the pace and in that tournament there was a Korean team and a Japanese team. It was no surprise to see that it was quick ball movement, quick decision making. Yeah. Everyone knew their role and they were disciplined about their role.
Well, it gives support to the notion or the underpinning reasoning for this national curriculum that we're embarking on a technical revolution.
Yeah.
How do we compete unless we become technically proficient early?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's much debate about the 1-4-3-3 and the 1-4-4-2 and what coaches do and don't do. I quite like the 1-4-3-3 system. Not because it's the structure that sits out in the field. I think if you're focusing on that, you've really missed the point. Mm. That's my position.
Yeah.
If you're also keen on focusing on who's playing 2 and 6 and 7, I think you've missed the point. I think the point about that structure is that on the field, certain players have certain roles to play.
Mm.
And at a young age, giving someone a frame of reference, you're playing number 7, fine, I'm out here, I'm running. But this is what you need to do. You need to stay in space.
Mm.
You need to create opportunities by making certain movements. You need to be in support. You need to be available when the midfield gets... So it's about education.
Yeah.
So when you define a space on the field and that player gets to understand that, I think that's the importance of the 1-4-3-3. The other thing
about... structure teases that out, doesn't it?
It does. And, it shouldn't be any surprise to us, really. I mean, for instance, the rugby codes have been doing that for years.
Mm.
I mean, if you put on a number 9 jersey for rugby, you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're a halfback. You're half a back and you're half a forward.
Yeah.
This is what you do. If you put on the number 15, you're a fullback, this is what you do. So it shouldn't be much of a surprise to us. And to that extent, I really welcome that because it also should make coaches' jobs a little bit easier too.
Mm.
Okay, today you're playing number 2. This is the role of number 2. Mm. So what I want to see you do today is...
Mm.
So hopefully over, 10 to 15 years of age, so you're moving from the 10s to the 15s, and that 1-4-3-3 structure changes, players will start to understand the various roles on the park. I mean, it's no surprise to see Holland, for instance, Robin, do back headers and passes without even looking because he knows...
Where the player will be.
He knows a 6 or 8's going to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, it shouldn't really be a surprise. But I think that aspect of the game, together with that shape, also creates a lot more space on the field.
Yeah, it certainly does.
It moves fullbacks up and down. Mm. So all of a sudden, the fullback role's a bit different. But there's a lot of space around. And that's one of the key elements is, we tend to focus on the ball and the ball carrier. A lot of the skills training, a lot of the drills are about the ball and the ball carrier. But I think what's underplayed and what needs to be coming out a lot more is what a player's doing that are off the ball.
Yeah.
If I make this movement, am I crowding that space?
Mm.
Or if I do this movement, am I opening that space up for the ball carrier perhaps to go into it? Or what decision will the fullback or the back or the midfield do if I move over here and the ball carrier's over there?
Well, and in possession... That's got to be the lion's share of the work.
Yeah, and I think, these are the sort of things that the 1-4-3-3 is sort of teaching. This is what I'm getting out of it anyway.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm just narrowly focused on this is how each player should sit on the park, then I just don't think you're going to get anything out of it.
Yeah.
And so those same principles apply in the 1-4-4-2.
Mm.
Hell, they even apply in the 1-4-2-4.
Mm.
Think about that structure.
Yeah.
How much space in the park is there? Okay, so there's some risks, but... in those sort of structures. But if you're on top of the risks and you identify those with the players, then fine. But then once again, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, you know, who really cares about the result? If the player at the end of the year knows more about the game, then I think you've done a good job.
Yeah. Well, then I take it the standard of training that your daughter experienced at that national level was pretty high too.
Oh yeah, I think it, because the playing groups there are sort of talented. Some of the players are just exceptional. But by and large, the training regime is no different to what we do at clubs. You know, you're doing possession stuff.
Yeah.
You're doing passing stuff.
Yeah. Probably just doesn't break down as much.
No, and you know, you're doing backs against forwards. Sure, they were tired and they were making, you know, clumsy mistakes at times, but you know, they were in that environment which was A, supportive, and you know, they were technically, some of the girls there were just fantastic, you know. Not seen some of that quality. You don't see it at nationals either because they're not all the best players. So it's fascinating stuff, and then you start to appreciate the role that Nicola did and sort of identifying these with the support of others and saying, yeah, she's got this pretty well right.
Yeah.
So there must be something in it.
There's a lot at stake in choosing those players.
Yeah. They're still young though, at 13. Yeah. I think it's been a good experience, a good eye-opener, and you know, it's a start of the, you know, if you want to take the game up seriously, it's going to be hard work.
Yep. Yeah, that's a hell of a lesson to learn.
Yeah.
Well, that's a long introduction. That's okay. If I had an observation about the coaching of our team at the last Nationals, I thought in a number of cases they were coaching football and not futsal.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds silly to say it, but I don't think some people make the distinction that they're very different games.
Yeah. By not making that distinction, you're really not challenging the players.
That's right.
If you have a look at the curriculum, just trying to bring football into it, and you have a look at the 1-4-3-3. Once you get to a certain level, so you play triangle pointing forward, and once you get to 15 or whatever the age is,
you flip
it the other way and you play triangle playing back, and then once you get to another age, you're starting to talk about rotating midfield.
Yep, that's it.
Okay, now any futsal player will tell you there's nothing complicated about rotations. In fact, why do we have to wait till we're 18? You know, kids are doing it in futsal at 12. Well, if you're Brazilian, you're doing it at 10. So I think, and that you know, that challenge, saying similar to the structure of the various ways we play the outdoor game, you've got two up front and two at the back. Well, maybe not necessarily. Maybe no one has a position. Now we're really starting to challenge the young player.
Yeah.
Well, if I don't have a position, what am I meant to do? Well, you're meant to move. You're meant to support. You got a ball carrier. Same concepts. Level and line outside. Yep. But I move. Constantly moving. So those sort of challenges. So I think there's not that much of a bridge to build between some of the concepts, but you really need to focus a little bit more on the movement and the support, and it's a rapidly moving game.
Yeah, I think in that respect it's got tremendous pluses.
Yeah.
I think there's some big takeaways for football.
Yeah.
I know that is not necessarily the view of some football coaches.
Yeah.
But they just got to liberate themselves, I think, and see what this does.
Well, I just, you know, you've always got to keep an open mind to these things. And I didn't really appreciate the interaction until you start breaking the outdoor game down and you say, well, you know, some of these principles are actually similar to futsal.
Yeah.
You know, our Brazilian friends have been doing it for a long time. And, you know, perhaps some of the coaches that don't recognise that maybe have seen a form of the indoor game that is a bit old. Maybe it's 10 years, 15 years ago.
Well, if they'd have gone down and seen a game where the only thing that was happening was the goalkeeper was hoofing it, it would have echoed like long ball, second ball in football, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, but if they'd have seen another game where they're just feeding it out from the back, making the players play it, they'd have perhaps wondered whether this wasn't something else.
Yeah. I just think you have to keep an open mind, and it'd be good to see some of the dedicated outdoor coaches come to some indoor sessions and see what actually gets taught.
Yeah.
Particularly the movement side of things and the body shape and the playing out from the back. 9 times out of 10, you'll see most good coaches will ask their goalkeepers just to drop the ball in front of the player.
Yeah. Desperate to keep the ball.
Yeah, just and then the rest of it's about movement and support. Non-ball carrier, what are you doing?
Mm.
You know, if the ball carrier loses the ball because he doesn't have any options, not his problem or her problem, someone else's problem.
Yeah.
We need to solve that problem. How do I get my teammate out of trouble? Well, I've got to get into this space.
Yeah. And this was brought home to me when down at Woden, we played a game against the AOS. I might have mentioned it to you. And it and all of a sudden, our midfield, when not in possession of the ball, looked quite distressed.
Yeah.
And got into all sorts of difficult positions.
Yeah.
And then the light globe went on for me. The young AOS team in the midfield was playing rotation.
Oh, well.
There was a little mini futsal game going on inside a football game.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had us deeply troubled for a while until the players had actually worked it out.
Yeah.
And when they worked it out, they began to cope with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was obviously being trained in at that point.
Yeah, that's probably the high level, I suppose. If the 1-4-3-3 is triangle forward, triangle back, and then movement rotation.
Mm.
And I understand why, and they're saying to leave it to the later age groups because you have to master the basics first.
Yeah.
But perhaps we should bring the basics right back into the junior stuff so that we are moving around.
Yeah.
Movement's so crucial. It's identifying and utilising space in a positive way.
Yeah.
It's a real challenge for coaches because
we
all focus on the ball carrier. What's the ball carrier do? But hang on, all of a sudden, we've got our guy who's playing out left coming into the penalty box.
Mm.
You know, why is that player doing that? You need to stay out there because by doing that, you're just crowding the penalty box. Mm. And anyone who knows plays futsal, closer you get to the D...
Yeah, greater the threat.
But also that it's just so easy to defend because everyone comes in behind the ball.
Yeah.
But if you're hanging out wide, you've got to keep an eye on the player out wide. Right.
You're pulling people out of the mix.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the difficulty with the coaching. We're so focused on the ball that, you know, how do you teach your kid his movements, bringing someone in? It's just, you know, constantly focusing, constantly reinforcing.
Yeah. Well, of course, futsal pressure cooks that because a player does track in on the wrong end, he will drag a player, a defending player, into the mix and choke off the passing lines pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you'll see the good futsal teams, as soon as a pass is intercepted and the players are picked up, bang, the ball carrier's driving it down the middle, and you'll see good teams will just split the defence by going wide either side and then, you know, trying to make the person that's defending a counter-attack, usually 2v1. Mm. So, well, you need to make a decision here. You're going to slow me down so my teammates get in. Well, into support.
What better example in our Premier League here than the forward Maycor for Belconnen?
Right.
Now, his movements up around the box, he's like a rattlesnake.
Yeah.
They're quick, they're decisive.
Yeah.
He doesn't move doesn't have to move a whole lot.
Yeah.
Every time I look at him, I think he's playing futsal when he's up there, and he's as dangerous as anything going around.
Yeah, yeah. No surprise about that. There's plenty of experience there.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the movement, it sort of challenges people to think about what's this guy doing.
Exactly.
And it may not be anything about Maycor. It may be that Maycor wants to drag you out of that spot so-and-so is going to drive down the middle of it.
Yeah.
Same with futsal. You see, the same with futsal. There's space, you know, players need to drop into that space to create those options. It might take the defence away for you to make a shot. It's those. You know, and I think it's because the ball's such an attraction to the eye.
Yeah.
When our Japanese friends were over early in the year, we saw a lot of movement, third man runs off the ball, causing a lot of indecision with the defenders.
That's the Nara team.
Yeah, a lot of indecision with the. But the 4-3-3 is great about, you know, really great about creating that. Mm. You know, and you can have fullbacks overlapping runs, and then all of a sudden, whereas your player out wide was taking on a fullback 1v1, all of a sudden you've got an overlapping runner.
Yeah,
there's a 2v1.
Yeah, perfect.
And that's what we need to educate the kids. You're dribbling into a space where you can create those overlaps, or are you running without the ball into that space to create that? So now the defender needs to make a decision.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge.
We speak now to Heather Reid, CEO Capital Football, on the disputes and discipline review process that is currently underway and the related process of the abuse of referees and our inability to get enough of them. This is a plea, as much as anything else, for us to support referees. This is just too important to ignore.
Could I ask you, the discipline and disputes procedures at Capital Football, you've undertaken a review of that too, a very lengthy and careful one, and we've spoken to Alistair at length. So how have you found that's proceeded? Are you ready to launch that in full?
No, I think it's fair to say that it's ongoing, Peter, and comment is still welcome. You mentioned Mark O'Neill before. He is a busy man, but Mark O'Neill is pretty much leading a committee which consists of people from the board and from clubs as well.
Yeah.
Feedback and comment about what the review is intended to do is most welcome. I understand that Mark is preparing a document that is the next phase. So there's been one phase, and now the next phase is to get this document out into the marketplace.
Yep.
And it was certainly the feedback from the men's Premier League clubs a few weeks ago that some people would like to have some input to the document, and that's exactly what we want.
Yep.
So I guess the only thing I can say in that respect is just to stay tuned for more news. We're operating under disciplinary regulations that haven't changed, I should point out. The regulations have not changed in over the past few years, other than to make sure that they're compliant with FFA regulations, because that's the guiding document. What has changed this year is the schedule of penalties, in the sense that it's become a much more expansive document. So people who sit on appeals panels, etc., have a clearer picture of where a penalty might fit within the overall schedule. So instead of it just being, you know, dissent by word, is it dissent by word to a player, to a referee, to another person, etc., etc.? And it gives the panel members more clarity in being able to fit that offence into the penalty of schedules. Would you say, I mean, I know you've been on the on an appeals panel, would you say that that's the way it's worked for you?
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it definitely has. It's brought clarity to it. I think it's brought surprise to the other side of the table at times. It's clarified, for me, it's clarified, sitting on the one side of the table, it's clarified it in a sense, in simple terms. If it occurs on the ball, it's serious foul play. If it occurs off the ball, it's violent conduct.
Right, right.
And there's a whole lot of things hang off both of those. And as you say, there's a bunch of direction from the FFA, which could somersault the whole lot. Spitting, for instance, at an official is a real serious piece of territory to get yourself into.
That's right.
As an example.
Yeah, we have adopted some new penalties using the Football Federation Victoria model, and not the full extent, I have to say. We've actually watered those down, because if we use the full FFV model of penalties...
Well, they're harsh.
Very, very harsh. So we've got a mix of between that model and FFA minimum penalties. But in saying that, we also have to balance up what you're suggesting is, you know, some clubs might feel we're too harsh with the penalties that have been handed out to some players, so whether it's 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever. But at the same time, the referees don't think we're harsh enough.
Well, absolutely right. And I think, if I could just say this, that, again, sitting on the other side of the table, I think clubs sometimes come rather naively to these tribunals. And if it gets down to a he said and the referee said, well, we're not going to abandon the referee or the match official.
We have to give utmost...
Are we?
We can't do that. We have to give utmost respect and trust in the referees.
Yeah.
We have a major issue in this town where we are losing senior referees. We are not doing enough to encourage junior referees to transit through to senior games because the environment in which the referees are doing their job is less than friendly at times. It's too abusive, it's too harassing, and people are turning away from the game. and more importantly, people are not becoming referees because of that as well.
Absolutely.
So we need to do something to clean that up, and I've said it before, I've also been subjected to some criticism myself recently from members of the referees fraternity about some comments that I may have made during the World Cup about the standard of refereeing, but I think everybody had a view about the standard of refereeing in the World Cup. We will continue to try and do what we can to penalise people who abuse or harass or show dissent towards referees, and we want a national campaign of respect from FFA, and we want to introduce a number of other programs that will help improve the environment, as I said, in which referees do their job.
It's a tough
issue.
It is, and yes, I think Clive MacKillop, the state coach of referees, correctly points out that referees are human beings and they will make errors.
Mm-hmm.
He points out also that a young referee will process something like 200 decisions in a game.
Mm.
An experienced referee will process about 600.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to keep them in longer for them to get better at processing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We were delighted to have an English Premier League referee join us for part of the Kanga Cup when Peter Walton came as a guest speaker and a mentor during the tournament. He was fantastic. And in response to a question about whether we could have the use of video technology on games at FIFA level anyway, he just said, well, look, you know, and the quality of referees' decisions, you know, he said, in an English Premier League game, there can be something like 32 cameras, television cameras, pointed at the game.
Saturate them.
Absolutely saturated. And yet, you know, the referee, so you've got all those cameras, and yet the referee has one pair of eyes, one set of ears, and okay, they have assistants, but they can't possibly see everything. And as you say, that statistic of 600 decisions is just phenomenal.
It is
They
phenomenal.
Are people, they are humans, and you know, we've got to let them try and enjoy the game as much as anybody else does.
Could I just make another sort of unsolicited observation from sitting on the other side of the table for the listener out there? I think you'd be astonished if you could see some of the genuinely outrageous behaviour that is perpetrated on the field. Total loss of control by player, coaches and spectators. And that's a real handful for a young referee.
So we all have a responsibility to tell people that that's not appropriate.
Correct.
Starting from the coaches and captains of the teams and other people on the sideline.
Yeah.
So if we see a spectator behaving badly or continuing to abuse a referee, then somebody needs to take responsibility to go and tell that spectator to shut up, pull their head in, go somewhere else and let these people do their job.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
We need to do something quite seriously.
Now let's go to an interview between Dr. Cohen, kids sports psychologist, and Al Miller, All-American Hall of Fame football, soccer as they call it, player, and they're talking about helping children reach their potential, in this case in football. This is an excellent piece.
Just how much is the right type of being able to help your child fulfill, you know, reach their potential, and that's what it's all about. Everybody wants to see their child reach their potential, right? How much of that is steering, and then when does it turn into you're really pressuring your child? And we see it from, we look at it from an expectation point of view. You know, parents often, you know, they unknowingly place a lot of high expectations on their kids, which we think turn into that pressure, which the child now internalizes is, oh, well, mom and dad wants me to score 4 goals today. Or
they want me to win a scholarship to college. That's why they'll keep me in the sport. The other argument, Pat, is the idea should a child be exposed to a lot of sports, or should they specialize? Mm-hmm. And every sport now is fighting to get that specialization. You know, the soccer community, they feel like, well, all the other countries in the world, which are soccer crazy, that the young players play year-round. So they're going to be much better and more skillful players if they play year-round than if they only play 3 or 4 months a year. So there's this huge fight for the parent and children's time in to keep them in the area of specialization. And I submit to you that I think, you know, the broad brush of getting exposure to 2-3 sports, I would much prefer personally. But I would also submit to the fact that if I'm given the full year-round training, I'm going to make a better athlete in that particular sport than I'm going to if I only have them 3 or 4 months. So it's really a tough argument, and I don't know if there's any answers. I think the sports have their own expectations. Like soccer is trying to develop, you know, professionals so that they can have great national teams, and they have to do that because we definitely would like to compete against the rest of the world and do well, like we do in so many of our other sports. But at the same time, you know, I think. That group is a very small percentage of the kids that are playing soccer today, and I think we have to think about the other children. But you hit on something that triggered a thought in my mind, and that is, what is the parent's expectation? To me, the first expectation of a parent has to be fun. If that child doesn't enter into youth sports and have fun and enjoyment playing them, then they're never going to succeed. My mother wanted so badly for me to be a great piano player and forced me to take piano lessons and forced me to practice. And I can tell you that, you know, I never did learn how to play the piano worth a darn because I didn't want to. I didn't like it. If someone had found a way to make it fun and enjoyable, who knows, I might have become a concert pianist instead of an All-American soccer player.
Well, that's it for the Near Post Local. If you want this podcast, go to www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You'll find a lot of other interesting materials around football there for your consumption. Enjoy your football and futsal. See you next time. Ta-da. Round and round, up and down, through the streets of your